The White House is pushing lawmakers to approve a stimulus package to help folks at home, but it might be a challenge to get that done quickly.
Unless all 100 senators can simultaneously agree to legislation, which is not going to be the case here, the Senate has to go through a bunch of procedural hurdles.
Plus, why the remote learning your kids are doing might not count.
You know, some kids have internet, some don't. Some kids have electronic devices to learn on and some don't. And then you get the rural areas and they have a tough time even getting online.
It's Friday, March 20th. I'm Anne-Marie Fertoli for The Wall Street Journal. Here's what's news. U.S. stocks ended another turbulent week in the red, despite tougher restrictions across the country to address the coronavirus pandemic. The Dow fell more than 900 points today, or more than 4.5%. The index has now lost about 35% since its record high in February. The S&P 500 dropped 4.4%, and the Nasdaq fell 3.8%. New York is taking additional steps to slow the spread of the coronavirus. Today, Governor Andrew Cuomo ordered all non-essential workers to stay home. He said businesses that don't comply could be hit with fines.
We need everyone to be safe. Otherwise, no one can be safe.
New York has more than 7,100 infections so far, thousands more than any other U.S. state, and the outbreak isn't expected to peak for weeks. The city's hospitals are already struggling with shortages of medical equipment. Across the country, California's governor has ordered the state's 40 million residents to shelter in their homes, except for essential activities. California has over 1,000 cases. Illinois followed suit late today, becoming the second state to order residents to stay at home. The U.S. State Department has begun limiting most travel at the southern border with Mexico. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo said trade between the countries can continue.
Both our countries know the importance of working together to limit the spread of the virus and ensure that commerce that supports our economy continues to keep flowing. Here, too, the United States is glad to have a friend who's working side by side us in the fight.
The U.S. and Canada have already agreed to partially close their border to non-essential traffic. In Europe, Italy reported 627 coronavirus fatalities today, the world's highest number in a single day. The total death toll in Italy stands at 4,032, more than any other country. In some silver lining news, Treasury Secretary Steven Mnuchin said the IRS is pushing back tax day from April 15th to July 15th. That'll give individual taxpayers and businesses a bit more time to prepare and pay their taxes during the outbreak. Coming up, why it might still take a while for Congress to pass another stimulus package. U.S. senators have been wrangling over a stimulus package worth around $1 trillion. The plan includes providing checks directly to Americans to help lessen the financial impact of the coronavirus pandemic. As of today, there are still disagreements over how much those payments should be and who qualifies. Joining me now with the latest updates on Capitol Hill is Wall Street Journal reporter Siobhan Hughes. So, Siobhan, we know that lawmakers are planning some votes next week. Why the wait? We're seeing cities locked down across the U.S. Is there any concern on the Hill that Congress may be forced to go home? Why wait till next week?
So the reason Congress has to wait until next week is the Senate cannot agree on what a package looks like. Majority Leader Mitch McConnell has set a deadline of midnight for all the parties to come to an agreement. And at that point, he's going to start to force votes. But even there, there's a bit of a delay because unless all 100 senators can simultaneously agree to legislation, which is not going to be the case here, the Senate has to go through a bunch of procedural hurdles. There is time built in for debate. The Senate is known traditionally as the world's greatest deliberative body. And so as a result, final passage in the Senate could not happen until next week. And of course, then the House would have to vote too. The House is on recess while the Senate is in. There is a discussion in the House about allowing remote voting. There are a couple of lawmakers who have already tested positive. And because they have tested positive, other lawmakers have been exposed and are now in self-quarantine. And so there are risks to bringing everybody back into the chamber.
So let's talk about that. If Congress is forced to go home, how would they vote? How would that remote voting be set up? What would they be doing?
Well, we are in an entirely new world, and the technology for that really hasn't been set up. So it's unclear procedurally, mechanically, how Congress would be able to make that possible. However, it doesn't seem in some sense like that heavy of a lift. If you and I wanted to take a count of 435 members, we could certainly do that and put it in a spreadsheet.
Siobhan, what about the financial relief promised to Americans? What are the details you're hearing on those checks?
So what we know is the bill includes payments of as much as $1,200 per person and then $500 per each child. That phases out starting at an income of around $75,000. And then for an American who makes more than $99,000 a year, you don't get any relief. It was intended to be targeted at the people who were going to need it most. At the same time, there's actually a debate within the Senate over whether or not those direct payments are a good idea. It's only a one-time payment, and there is an expectation that the entire country could be hunkered down for a period of months. And so some people would prefer to use the unemployment insurance system to ensure that Americans who are out of work, who lose their jobs as a result of this crisis, have a steady flow of income coming instead of just a one-time payment that they're forced to stretch out over an indeterminate period of time.
Finally, Siobhan, some other news on the Hill this week. A few senators have been accused of selling their stocks after receiving briefings on the coronavirus. What can you tell us about what happened there?
Well, everybody has a different explanation as to what happened. The two senators who are the primary focus right now are Richard Burr of North Carolina and Kelly Loeffler of Georgia. Mr. Burr sold about $1.5 million worth of stock in mid-February before stock prices cratered. His explanation has been that he didn't have any information that the general public didn't have, that he himself had been paying attention to news reports on places like CNBC, and he relied exclusively on that information. I have done enough reporting to know that the information he was getting in those closed-door briefings was allegedly no different from what you could have gotten if you read the newspaper. However, one has to imagine that the texture of it was different. People tend to have a different understanding of things when they're getting a direct briefing from an important official than they do when they're reading a news article. The other complication, of course, is that when Republicans came out of these closed-door briefings, they had an incentive to align with the Trump administration and so tended to downplay the nature of the threat, which of course gave the general public a different impression of the economic risks than what someone in that briefing might have had. Kelly Loeffler has come out with a statement explaining that her stock sales were different because her money is managed entirely by an outside advisor. She has no input in that, and she felt it was an unfair smear to imply that any briefings in which she had been involved might have motivated her stock sales. One more note on Richard Burr. A lot of people have been calling on him to resign, and he has handled that by asking the Senate Ethics Committee to open an investigation into his trades. Now, on the Hill, the problem with that is the Senate Ethics Committee is largely viewed as somewhat toothless. And so there's a concern that Mr. Burr could get nominally cleared in ways that perhaps he shouldn't.
All right. Wall Street Journal reporter Siobhan Hughes joining us with all the news on Capitol Hill. Thank you so much, Siobhan.
Thank you. Good to talk to you.
Some good news for elementary and high school students. President Trump says the Department of Education will not enforce standardized testing requirements during the coronavirus outbreak.
They've been through a lot. They've been going back and forth, schools open, schools not open. It's been all standardized testing, and, you know, it's we're not going to be enforcing that, so I think you can let the people know. I think probably a lot of the students would be extremely happy, some probably not. The ones that work hard, maybe not, but it's one of those things.
Millions of school kids have been out of school for a week now, some even longer. And a lot of parents who are working from home have also been overseeing their kids' schoolwork, while teachers rush to set up and teach through online platforms. But it turns out that all that remote learning kids have been doing might not count. Joining me now to explain is Wall Street Journal reporter Tonnell Hobbs. So, Tonnell, what did you find out about how the work students are now doing from home may or may not count? I'm assuming it can vary state to state.
It can actually vary district to district and school to school. What I found, actually, as I was working on another story, and I started noticing that districts were pushing and providing links to this enrichment work that students could do at home, but it wouldn't be graded. And I started asking, well, what about, you know, the online graded work? And, you know, they pretty much told me due to possible inequities, they couldn't do online learning right now. And apparently, you know, some kids have internet, some don't. Some kids have electronic devices to learn on and some don't. And then you get the rural areas and they have a tough time even getting online. And then I was told, well, you know, we have special education students who sometimes need accommodations to learn and we have to be able to provide them too, and they can't be left out. That would definitely go against civil rights laws, and the U.S. Department of Education actually reminded districts and school leaders this week in a letter about watching out for those kind of inequities.
So I guess the bottom line, Tonnell, is for students and parents who are doing work from home now, is this going to count? Do we know the answer right now? How can they find out?
I would recommend that they ask their school district or their school specifically if will this work count. Now, what the schools are doing, if you go online, it will say this is enrichment work for families to do at home. You know, though some of the exercises are fun, like, you know, go outside and gather, you know, rocks or whatever, and try to measure something while you cook. So, you know, there some of them are really nice enrichment exercises, but they don't count for a grade. And some of the sites, the websites tell you this work will not be graded. Now, I would recommend just reaching out directly. If I'm a parent, I would ask. I mean, obviously, you want your child to be doing something, even if it's not for grade. But it's just sometimes a hard sell, especially with teenagers, to tell them you need to do this work. Oh, yeah, by the way, it won't be graded.
Maybe it's too early to tell at this point, but what could this potentially mean in terms of an extended school year for students and teachers?
Ooh, that's the one everybody's trying to avoid answering right now. And I have definitely asked and will continue asking. And right now, what I'm told is that that's really not the preferred method to go into the summer. A lot of these school systems will be seeking some type of waivers for the missed days, but that doesn't answer, you know, promoting kids or moving kids on that still might have had some work to do.
Okay, and we will keep following this story for you. Wall Street Journal reporter Tonnell Hobbs, thank you so much for joining me.
Oh, thank you so much.
And finally, the Wall Street Journal has been asking readers and listeners for your questions about the coronavirus. We've gotten a bunch. A lot of them, obviously, were health-related. You asked us questions like, how does the virus progress once you start showing symptoms? When should someone with symptoms seek treatment? And at what point do people stop being contagious? So we reached out to our health reporter, Brianna Abbott, for some answers.
So symptoms usually start with things like a dry cough or a fever. But as the disease progresses, it actually gets worse over time. So people start with those more mild symptoms, and then they develop sometimes to something more severe that looks more like a pneumonia. Early estimates from the World Health Organization put the onset time between more mild developing to more severe at about a week. There are a few emergency warning signs when people should seek more medical attention, and those include difficulty breathing, pain or pressure on the chest, confusion or the inability to wake somebody up, or bluish lips or face, and that's according to the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. Usually, people with more mild symptoms recover within 2 weeks, while more severe cases take about 3 to 6 weeks to recover. I don't think we know enough right now to say when someone stops being contagious. The CDC says that most people are contagious when they have the most severe symptoms, like sneezing or coughing, shedding the virus that way. But people can also potentially spread the virus early on or right before they start showing symptoms.
We know you have a lot more questions, so we set up a hotline. You can call us at 315-992-8298 and leave us a voicemail. We also have that number in our show description. We'll be bringing on our reporters and experts to try to answer as many of your questions as we can. And that's what's news for this Friday afternoon. If you like our show, please rate and review us wherever you get your podcasts. I'm Anne-Marie Fertoli for The Wall Street Journal. Thanks for listening.